The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, it's Amy and Kevin Wood from Rome, Georgia, and we love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 288 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today. And with me on the show today, of course, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. And Michelle and I are continuing with Diet Diva Tara Guidas, Run Disney's official nutritionist, as we ask questions from our listeners to Tara, and she provides us with all the nutritional information that we need to be successful in our running adventures. So let's continue with our questions with Tara Guidas. Okay, Tara, we're going back to the salt issue with Laura Gorewood Bailey's question. Laura asks, she wants to know what your opinion is of using salt tablets during long runs during the summertime.
Yeah, so I am a fan of salt tablets for certain people and done, you know, correctly. So that being said, you know, you have to kind of dose them appropriately and also make sure that you're consuming fluids. So you have to look at what else you're doing too. So if you're doing some, you know, Powerade or Gatorade or some kind of sports drink, plus you're doing some gels and maybe you are doing a bar or some, you know, chews of some sort or whatever, all of that is adding up to some sodium. So you want to make sure that you're looking at, you know, what you're getting there. But then if you, so the people that I think are most appropriate for salt tabs are heavy, heavy sweaters. Even in the not summer months, if you sweat, you know, a lot, then I would say you're appropriate for a salt tab. Also people who are cramping. So if you tend to get cramping, fairly often, then I would say you're definitely a candidate for some salt tabs. And in terms of how much, it's a little bit of trial and error. Just remember that salt tabs do not provide sugar. So you're not going to do salt tabs instead of gels or sports drinks or anything like that. You're going to do it in addition to. Okay. The other thing you can do is you can add a little bit more salt to your food the night before, the morning of, so that you don't have to, you know, do the salt tabs during the race as well. Okay. So, you know, runners can sweat out between 500, 1500 milligrams of sodium an hour, but everybody's different. And so, you know, kind of doing a little bit of trial and error and see how the salt tabs make you feel. And you know, swelling and all of that kind of stuff can play into it. But yes, the long answer is yes. I do think that distance runners, especially in the summertime, because we're sweating so much more, can benefit from doing some salt tabs.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Russ Stringer has a question. He says, I run quote unquote fasted during training runs fewer than 20 miles. I do not take gels or even sugared Powerade. I do drink Powerade Zero during all the training runs. Living in Alabama, I need to hydrate. After full marathons, I cannot even look at food after a race for a couple of hours. After halves, I can usually eat. So my question is it harmful or is it just be aware that you may be doing something or is it just a preference?
Ooh, good question. Harmful? It depends. It depends. It actually could be. I mean, there are decades of research to show over and over and over again that when people take in sugar during exercise, properly fueled before, during, and after, they are going to have the best results. They're going to have the best results in terms of their performance, but they're also going to have the best results in terms of recovery and injury prevention and keeping them off, you know, the sick list. I mean, immune system. I mean, I could go on for days about the benefits of definitely having something during exercise. Powerade Zero to me is nothing. All that is, I mean, during exercise, because it has no sugar. The three things you need during exercise are electrolytes, sugar, and fluid. So the Powerade Zero is providing fluid, it's providing a little bit of electrolytes, but it's not providing sugar. And so what I would do if I were you is make sure that is do a little bit of testing and try to eat something before. And if you can't eat anything, then at least drink something. So drink some sports drinks at rest. You know, have a little bit of cereal, even dry cereal, or have a piece of toast or a little plain bagel or a little banana or something to just get something in your stomach. And what happens is your body gets used to it then. So, you know, just like you're used to exercising with nothing, you know, your body will get used to having something in your stomach now and, you know, will expect that, and actually your performance should get better. So I know that there's a lot of anecdotal stuff out there right now. There's a lot of, you know, plans out there right now wanting people to not have anything, to eat fat, to run fasting, all that kind of stuff. But I can tell you that it totally goes against all the science that proves that it's better for you definitely to have it during races. And then the after question, you know, everybody, I don't want you to eat something and then throw up, but try to just, again, nibble on something. So whether it's grabbing that banana and just taking one bite of it, or drinking some sports drink, or eating a couple of dry crackers, you know, sometimes just that dry food is easier to get down than anything else. And then, you know, drink water for sure. But the sooner you can get something, the better after exercise.
So Tara, what would be the rationale for a plan that encouraged you to fast during a very long run?
It's a lot of anecdotal stuff. It's not really based on science. Mm-hmm. The idea is that they're trying to build up their body's just like this whole glycogen storage thing. And years ago, remember like the depletion and then the repletion. So you would deplete, and that's been kind of coming back into existence recently too, where people will deplete their glycogen stores so that their body gets used to functioning with very little glycogen stores, and then they'll carbo load for the couple days before. So then the idea is that I can get more in there because the body's used to having so little that then I can get more in there. None of this is proven by science, especially for half marathoners and marathoners. They are showing some things in the ultra runners, and but it's really not been accepted in the sports nutrition literature.
That must make you very frustrated then when you hear
it. It is a little frustrating.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. The next question comes from, and Anne, if I do not pronounce your last name correctly, I apologize, but I'm going to take a shot. It's from Anne Tomaszek, and Anne says, I'm a slow 14 to 15 minute mile runner. When I get into 20 mile runs for marathon training, what can I easily carry? I use Cliff Shots for halves, but I think I need more for a 5 hour run.
Yeah. Definitely. So you need fluid. So depending on your route, I mean, with my routes, I don't like to wear camelbacks or bring the fluid belts or anything like that. So I just plan my routes so that I either plant some bottles, or I run with a group that puts it out, or I know where water fountains are around. So fluid is the hardest thing to make sure that you have, because of course it's the heaviest. So fluid is definitely one thing that you're going to make sure that you need. And again, the three things you need during exercise are sugar, electrolytes, and fluid. So the sugar, you know, sugar and electrolytes are usually combined together with, you know, the gels, the blocks, the whatever. So gels are more concentrated. So blocks, you know, take up a lot more space. So if you're doing 5 hours, instead of bringing a ton of blocks, what I would do is mix it up with doing some gels, and then also planting or making sure that you have some sports drink as well. And then, you know, if you want to mix it up a little bit and have some blocks, that's fine. but you want to make sure that you're getting enough sugar in. And the idea is to take something every 15 to 20 minutes. You know, for a slower runner, you could stretch that to more like 20 to 30 minutes, but you want to make sure, because you're not burning at as fast of a rate, burning calories as quickly. So you can, you know, spread it out a little bit more, in terms of how much and how often. So I would say every 30 minutes at the least, or at the most, you know, longest amount of time, and make sure that you're getting some carbs and some fluid and some electrolytes.
So I just want to follow up, Tara, if Anne is not familiar with what you mean by planting, because this is something I do too, but if you want to explain it, or I can explain it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what I do, like when I travel, I'll plan out a route the night before, and I will go out and drive and put a bottle of Gatorade or Powerade in a bush.
Yep.
Under, so that it's hidden out of sight, so that nobody takes it. And then of course the next morning I make sure that it's sealed when I open it. So nobody's messed with it. But yeah, so you plant, or you make a route that's going to be like an out and back and or a loop, so that you can hit that bottle several times. You know, not just one time. So yeah, you basically decide on your route and then put it out for yourself either the morning of, or you can put it out the night before, however you want to do it, but you put it out yourself, so that when you get to that point, then it's there for you.
Right. What I do is when I have to do an extra long run, I actually run with a little bit more liquid, and then I, like 5 miles out, I plant it, I hide it just like you do behind a fence post or something. And then when I come back, I've already had all the rest of it. But the other thing that you said is what I usually do, Anne, is I plan out my route and I kind of divide it. So it's out and back, and then hit my car for the, you know, I have drinks in there and gels, and then out and back again. So I park my car in the middle of where I'm going to actually run, so that I have, you know, I go 5 miles out, 5 miles back, and then stop 5 miles out, 5 miles back. So that's how I do it. So, but I wouldn't necessarily carry all that nutrition and hydration with you, because that's going to add a lot and be really uncomfortable.
And I mean, they have great belts now and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you can carry quite a bit of like gels and stuff, but it's the fluid that's that's hard to carry that
much. It's heavy too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The next question is from our buddy John Beale, and he says, it seems like these days everyone is quick to tell you about some sort of a nutritional shake that you should be on. I can accept that maybe we should supplement our diets to get the nutrients that our meals don't provide, but I take multivitamins. Now, obviously it's best to eat your nutrients rather than drink them or get them from a pill. But in regards to supplemental nutrition, given the choice between a shake and a multivitamin, both having the same amount of nutrients and the same makeup, is one better to consume than the other? Will you absorb more from a shake than a multivitamin? I heard that your body passes the majority of your vitamins.
Wow, so great question.
Yeah, so is one better than the other? Will you absorb more from a shake? Those are his two questions.
Well, it's impossible to have a shake and a multivitamin that are going to be equal, because a shake is going to have macronutrients in it. And maybe he just means like the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals. So macronutrients are your carbs, your proteins and your fats, whereas your micronutrients are, you know, all your vitamins and minerals and all that kind of stuff. So what they do with these shakes is, and you know, of course, a vitamin basically has no calories. I mean, so that's what I'm saying, that you're comparing, sort of, you're comparing apples to oranges. Mm-hmm. So the answer would be no. You're never going to be able to have the comparison. But I think what he's getting at is, if I, you know, if I look at the list of the calcium and the iron and the vitamin C and the down the list of the nutrition facts on the shake, and I look at my Centrum, you know, and it has the same thing, what's better? So the reason, and what they do basically is, and they don't really do this, but for illustration purposes, it's like taking, you know, a multivitamin and just sprinkling it into the shake. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. it's added to it the same that it's put into a pill. Mm-hmm. So there is some evidence that, you know, tablets versus capsules versus powder versus whatever is going to be absorbed differently. I don't know. We really don't know. The greatest amount of absorption, I would say the powder probably is absorbed a tiny bit better, depending on the vitamin mineral that you're talking about, than, you know, that hard tablet. The fact that you can like see a vitamin in x-rays and that it's passed through whole. I mean, I've never seen a whole vitamin in my poop. So that's not true.
Okay. So interesting. You hear a lot of urban myths that I've never heard of. I want to see that x-ray.
See the vitamin. And it's like, well, if they just swallowed it, you can see it, but it does get dissolved and absorbed. But, you know, so the benefit of...
I want to go out drinking with her. She's got the best stories. Sorry. Drinking protein shakes, I mean.
Of course, spiked with something. We could throw some Baileys in it at least. So the benefit of doing the protein shake would be you're getting your proteins, you're getting your amino acids that you're not going to get from a multivitamin. You're going to get carbohydrates. You know, I mean, you're getting food versus just vitamins and minerals. But the absorption, the question was getting at the absorption of like the vitamin C in a vitamin tablet versus a shake. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be that much different. And then the other part of the question was, don't we just, you know, get rid of whatever is excess? Yeah, essentially we do. I mean, I call it supplement pee. If you have like really, really bright yellow urine, that means that there's probably some B vitamins, some, you know, some water soluble vitamin C, something coming out in your urine. And that's, you know, but that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's okay to have, you know, extra that your body then eliminates rather than have a deficiency. So, you know, to a certain point, you know, the American philosophy is if a little is good, then more must be better. So I'll just take a ton. But, you know, there's a limit with certain vitamins and minerals, of course, that there's some side effects to taking too much. But in general, yeah, I would say, you know, take those multivitamins. You can have some shakes if you want. But, you know, the shakes, I mean, it's just like the Shakeologies and the, you know, all these different shakes out there. There's no one shake that's going to melt pounds off you. What it is it's replacing a meal. So if you're replacing your meal of 600 calories with a shake that's 200 calories, you'll lose weight. So, you know, and shakes, for some people, they you know, they're satisfying and whatever. I like to chew. I like to chew my food. So I've never been satisfied with just having shakes as my, you know, as a meal myself. I mean, I might for breakfast have a smoothie sometimes, but to just have like a shake for lunch or dinner, not doing it for me.
So interesting.
Shake. So, Tara, this next question is, as we say in the business, right in your wheelhouse. So here it comes. It's from Joseph Graf Hull, and he says, what should I eat to lose weight when running? I'm gaining weight. Is it because of all the carbs? All right, the floor is yours.
Yeah, this is your topic last year.
Yes, Joseph. It's not just the carbs. So there's four things that have calories, carbs, protein, fat, and alcohol. So all four of those things, when you consume it more than what you're burning, can cause you to gain weight. The problem is that most people overcompensate. So they'll overcompensate for how many calories they're burning. They say, oh, I'm running, you know, a training run of 12 miles tomorrow or 20 miles tomorrow or whatever. So you eat a lot for dinner that night. Then you have, you know, your little breakfast before your run. Then you have, you know, of course, sugar and things during your run, which you should. Then after your run, you overcompensate with, you know, oh, let's go out for breakfast and let's have, you know, XYZ. And you end up with a lot of calories for breakfast because I just ran 20 miles. I deserve it. And then later on in the day, I just ran 20 miles. Let's go out for ice cream. And then that night, hey, I ran 20 miles this morning. Let's go and have XYZ. So what happens with most people who gain weight during marathon training is that they're overcompensating for the calories that they're burning because it's maybe new to you that I'm, you know, wow, I'm, you know, burning a lot more. The other thing that happens is you get hungry. Yeah. Because you're burning more calories. So that's where, you know, eating more often, increasing your fiber, increasing your protein and fiber and healthy fats. Also, those all fill you up. So if you're just eating a lot more carbs, that might be what you're craving, and that might be what you want. And you're craving that because your body wants energy, and it wants quick energy, and carbs are quick energy. But what you need to do is give your body a combination of carbs, but also make sure that you're having protein and or fat and fiber along with those carbs, because that's what's going to give you more lasting energy. So hopefully that helps you to know that, you know, you're probably overcompensating for the calories by allowing yourself to eat more than what you should be for the amount that you're burning, and you're probably hungrier, so you're eating more. So you have to just use portion control still. You do not deserve to eat anything you want because you're running 50 miles a week.
I would love to know how many times you've answered that. you make it sound interesting every time. And does Run Disney archive any of your seminars? Like, do they
no,
videotape?
Not to my knowledge. Oh. Not the videotapes. Got, you know, a million blogs on the site that I do.
Yeah, it would be really cool if they could put those up, because don't you kind of do a new focus every year? I mean, you don't.
Yeah.
So tell them that. tell them I said that. Because I mean, just think of all the information that you could put out there. It would be interesting. Okay, so Michael C. Jones is kind of following up with Joseph's question. He says, I need to lose about 75 pounds. We are starting the wheat belly way of eating, which is sort of low carb, gluten free. Is this a good way of eating, or is there an ideal way of eating or to lose weight as a runner?
Oh, I love this question. Thank you so much, Michael. So there is absolutely zero, zilch, absolutely nada benefit to cutting out gluten from your diet unless you are gluten intolerant or have celiac disease. And there is absolutely no benefit. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
There is absolutely no benefit to doing it half-ass. Mm-hmm. So if you say, oh, you know, we're doing wheat belly and we're going to cut out gluten and we're going to cut out all wheat, and then like Friday night comes and you're like, oh, let's just have pizza. Mm-hmm. We can cheat one night. It doesn't do any good. So if you have celiac disease, if you are gluten intolerant and you've been tested and you know that you are, then you absolutely have to eliminate all sources of gluten and wheat all the time. And the minute you quote unquote cheat, it causes your gut to react and you will feel symptoms. The average person digests wheat just fine. We can eat wheat. We are made to eat wheat. It is okay to eat wheat. So the wheat belly diet could help you lose weight because it's cutting out a lot of foods that you probably eat on a regular basis. And you're probably cutting back on sugars. You're probably cutting back on white flour. You're probably cutting back on a lot of things that are high glycemic that don't do you much good anyway. So I'm a fan of doing that. But to say, oh, gluten makes me fat is a complete misconception.
Oh, so interesting. Wow. All right. Do we have our last question?
We have
Michael?
Our last question, and it comes from, why do I get the people with the really difficult names?
I am Scribner McLean, so don't.
It comes from Aubrey Kufner. And Aubrey says, the last question of the day, do I really need to eat something before running? I usually run in the mornings and never have found it an issue.
Kind of like the question we had before.
Yeah. I will use goo on long runs, but I never feel hungry.
Yeah. So, Aubrey, yes. There's no other way around it. Yes, you absolutely should eat something. And even if it's 4:30 in the morning and you don't feel hungry, your body, your glycogen stores are depleted from overnight. You will run better. You'll feel better. You will recover better. You'll burn more fat if you actually eat something before exercise. You're training your body, you're replenishing your body with some glycogen, but you're also training your body that I'm going to give you some energy, and so it's more willing to actually take from those fat stores. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions with people who are trying to lose weight as well. And you didn't mention weight loss, but it just came to my head, so I'm mentioning it. But you know, that people, they try to not eat breakfast, and they try to exercise on an empty stomach, and they try to do all these things thinking they're going to burn more fat. But what happens is when you don't eat and you demand a lot of energy out of your body, you're training your body to say, hey, I'm not going to give you anything. So when I do give you something, you better hang on to it, AKA I'm going to gain fat. So it's not a good practice to exercise on an empty stomach, to try to go all day without eating. The best way to get fat is to not eat. So you want to make sure that you're having a little something. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to eat the, you know, all-you-can-eat buffet before your run in the morning. I'm a morning runner as well. I'm on the treadmill or outside by 5 a.m. typically. I get up at 4:30. That's my typical routine. And I get up, I drink some water, and I eat a few handfuls of dry cereal. So it's either, right now it's blueberry-flavored shredded wheat. Sometimes it's Honey Nut Cheerios. Sometimes it's regular Cheerios. Sometimes it's Wheaties. Sometimes it's whatever. So, you know, the point is it's not anything super high fiber, but it might have a little fiber, but it's just, it's carbs. It's having something to eat before I go exercise, and I'm not eating half the box. I'm just having, you know, maybe 100 to 150 calories worth. You could have a banana. You could have a piece of toast. You could have some sports drink. Just have something about 100 to 150 calories for a shorter run. If you're doing a longer run, then I would say more like 300 to 400 calories before your run. And so, you know, so that you're training your body that, yes, I'm going to give you some energy. And then, of course, a longer run, you would be taking some energy in during the run as well, because that 300 calories is going to last you 20 miles.
All right. So I'm going to use my podcaster privilege to ask you my own question.
Sure.
And that is, you know, I'm vegetarian.
Yes.
And I do, but I'm not vegan. So I do use dairy for a lot of my protein. Is it beneficial to drink milk that is low fat or partially fat or whole milk? What is the best thing to do? I mean, is there any benefit of drinking whole milk, or is it just extra calories?
No, everyone over the age of 2 should be drinking 1% or fat-free milk. There's absolutely no benefit to having whole milk or even 2% milk after the age of 2, unless you're trying to gain weight. I mean, there's more calories and more fat, but it's the same amount of protein, same amount of calcium, same amount of everything in the fat-free milk and the 1% milk versus the higher fat milks. So, you know, the fat-free, I agree, it's a little watery. So I'm fine with 1%. You know, it gives that little bit of mouthfeel that has a little bit of fat in it. But yeah, I would say you're perfectly fine to do that.
It's an easier sell. I have 2 teenage boys, and they won't drink the skim milk. So yeah. It's an easier sell for them.
Yeah, that's what we have in my house too. The 1% is great for my kids too. Yeah.
That's cool. Great. Thank you.
Tara, before we let you go, would you be so kind as to tell our listeners where we can find more of this tremendous knowledge that you have? And I'm thinking of dietdiva.net, but please tell us where.
And your book. We're going to hear about your book.
Yeah. So I actually did start blogging a little bit more on dietdiva.net. I have some interns. I have Christina, who works for me, is a registered dietitian and sports dietitian as well. We all blog on that site. So there's actually usually 3-4 times a week we have a new blog up on dietdiva.net. And then you can also, of course, go to the Run Disney nutrition section. They usually put one of my blogs up about once a week. And then I have a couple books. One is Pregnancy, Cooking, and Nutrition for Dummies. Not real popular with runners, unless you are planning to become pregnant. But it does have 100 recipes that are really, really good, and you don't have to be pregnant to eat the recipes. So they're very nutrient-dense, of course, because they're for pregnancy. And then the more recent book is the Flat Belly Cookbook for Dummies, which also has a bunch of wonderful recipes and also some tips and tricks to try to get rid of that abdominal fat.
I have that one, and I love it. I love it.
Yay!
So this is great. Thank you so much, Tara. And I want to congratulate you on getting married. Not everybody knows that, but that's super, super exciting. And you're a beautiful bride, and it's so nice to, you know.
Sorry, boys. She's off the market.
Yeah, you'll probably see John. He's come to some Run Disney stuff so far. We've got 4 boys between us. So it's always, you know, figuring out the Run Disney weekends of what we're doing with boys. Are they coming? Are they not coming? Are they, you know, whatever. So, but yeah, he's run a couple of the races and loves it. So,
maybe the boys will run some of those 5Ks.
Yeah, actually, he did with his boys are a little bit older than mine. And so they've done the 5K and loved it. They came out to Star Wars weekend, so they had a blast.
Oh, fun. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Tara, and we'll get you back here as soon as we can.
Yeah, sooner. It's been too long.
Yes, absolutely. Anytime.
So for Tara Guidis, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we will see you on the road.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.